Everybody, welcome to Out the First. It's March 20th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. We've got a couple things to talk about today. One is something we've known about. We'll talk a little bit about the PGA Tour Policy Board, the PGA Tour Enterprises Board, namely its player directors, meeting Yasser Al-Rumayyan for the first time in the Bahamas. But I want to start off, actually, with something that I don't really have a whole lot about in terms of absolute specifics, but something I've heard about and then something that kind of came to public light today. Before we get into any of that, thanks for listening to the show. This is my kind of daily weekday podcast where we talk about the two biggest stories in golf. We are presented by our friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. Use the promo code GolfNewsNet25 and save 25% on your first order. Spring's here. Their line's looking great for this time of year. Multiple capsules out that are looking awesome. The Stang Quarter Zip is my favorite, and I will be rocking that all throughout the summer and the spring months as well. So, swannies.co, golfnewsnet25 is your promo code. Okay, so I got a phone call today, and I was out actually doing a little bit of raking, doing a little bit of yard work, and got a call, made a call back, and I had a conversation with somebody who alerted me to a story out of South Korea. It's called the Chosun Times, the publication. And I don't know the Chosun area. I don't really know South Korea very well at all. And the report from the Chosun Times, which was translated into English, they have an English edition. It says Callaway, they have an exclusive. Callaway Golf is for sale. And I was very surprised to see that come out today for a variety of reasons. But I guess the biggest one is that Callaway has not that long ago did their quarterly results. You know, they're a publicly traded stock. They have to have this kind of thing. They share results. They have a call. Chip Brewer, who's the CEO of Topgolf Callaway Brands, that's a formal name for the company, says, you know, everything's going great with Topgolf. They're going to plan on selling Callaway equipment. They're trying to sell more Callaway equipment in Topgolf locations. Topgolf continues to grow. Callaway's out there being number one or two basically in every major category of golf equipment, whether that's balls, drivers, irons, whatever. And, you know, things are looking good. Well, apparently it is either the right time to sell or it's the right time to try to break these two companies up, to break what Callaway, Topgolf Callaway Brands owns up. So the Chosun Times reports that a South Korean investment banking group is trying to put together basically a bid to buy this company, buy just Callaway for $3 billion. And that the people who were kind of three private equity firms, including BlackRock, and these three firms represented a little bit more of a third of the ownership of Topgolf Callaway Brands, want to spin off Topgolf into its own company, let it operate on its own without Callaway or the other brands that Topgolf Callaway owns, and go from there. So Topgolf Callaway obviously owns Topgolf, owns Callaway. They own what's called OGIO. They make bags, golf bags, travel accessories. They've owned that for a while. They own a company called Jack Wolfskin, which is a little bit more outdoorsy in terms of apparel, but it does have some golf crossover there. It makes some really nice jackets, apparently. I own a pair of Jack Wolfskin pants that are really nice for the springtime, like when you need pants, but you don't want heavy pants. And then they own Travis Matthew as well, the apparel maker, and they've had them for a long time. And I guess the thought here is, and again, this has not been confirmed by Callaway. They're not going to talk about it. There's no reason for them to talk about it unless this is patently false. And it's good for the stock price. The stock price is up 12 to 14% today, depending on when you check the ticker. Basically, to the point that the market capitalization of Topgolf Callaway Brands is almost exactly the rumored amount of money for which Callaway Golf would, for which it would be sold. Okay? That's pretty compelling. I mean, that's obviously a reactionary thing. That's not necessarily a knowledge thing, right? There are just as many people guessing on the stock market as there are everywhere else in life. But that is a pretty big shockwave if that does turn out to come to pass. And if it does come to pass, then that means almost certainly that three of the top four or the top three outright companies in golf, in terms of just pure sales numbers, would be owned by South Korean firms. So KBS Capital Partners sold TaylorMade after they had bought it off of Adidas, and they sold that to a Korean firm called Centurion, who's they did it in 2021. In 2011, Fila Holdings bought most of basically Acushnet, which is now public, but they bought Acushnet, and that was 2011. So this would be the third. And it kind of makes sense from a variety of different perspectives, right? From the perspective at Topgolf, you know, Topgolf and Callaway, they do have a crossover. I mean, they both are golf, right? But inherently, Topgolf is not a place where you go buy golf clubs. Topgolf is a place you go have fun. And you practice your golf game, but really, you're there to have fun. Most people are there to have fun. They're not there to work on their game at Topgolf. It's like a bowling alley, right? Except it's golf, and it's upscale. It's got nice drinks and food. So you're not selling a whole lot of Callaway equipment there. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it makes more sense to kind of have Callaway be vertically aligned, so to speak, in the business term, vertically aligned with a company that can do manufacturing, can acquire manufacturing easily. A lot of that is done in South Korea. And to kind of have the whole supply chain controlled from top to bottom. TaylorMade did that very successfully. Obviously, KBS wound up injecting, you know, its money to buy the company from Adidas. And then they went, and in this process after selling it, then you had TaylorMade acquire a golf ball manufacturer. So now they've got plants to be able to make their golf balls. They can do it all in-house. They have more of their stuff in-house, end-to-end, controlled by them. That's what Acushnet, the company that owns Titleist, does very well. They pretty much own their beginning to end operation. There's no outsourcing to anybody else. There's none of that. So what could happen here, the most likely outcome here, if this does happen, is you would then have whoever winds up buying the company probably go buy manufacturing capability if they didn't already have it in-house, so that they could do all of this, realize cost savings, and build up the value of it. Meanwhile, Topgolf can exist on its own. I've heard so many different things over the years about how quickly Topgolf makes the money back on their locations, but they do have a significant debt profile. So when Topgolf was purchased in full from Callaway, when that announcement was made, I believe in October of 2020, when that announcement was made, Topgolf was valued at $2 billion. And on top of that, Callaway took on $555 million of debt from Topgolf, which means, you know, that when as they were expanding quickly, they were building locations. You take on debt to create that property, you build it up, and then you pay it down right over time. And those locations may pay off quickly, but they do take time. And when the purchase was made from Callaway, and by the way, Callaway had a 20% stake early on in Topgolf in 2006, and one of the worst points in Callaway's history when nothing was going right. They couldn't make a good golf club. They couldn't get people to come back to the brand. They made a very smart investment, and then ultimately, 14 years later, they wound up buying the rest of it. And they put this company together, and they thought the synergies would all kind of work out. But it sounds like activist investors have more or less said, look, we're either out of here, and we're tanking this thing, or we're going to spin this off into two separate things. We'll sell off the hard goods piece of it, because frankly, you can max that out right now, right? I mean, golf's never been hotter. And if you're selling everything really well, you can go sell it a nice little upcharge, right? Sell close to $3 billion. That's the whole company's capitalization right now. If you could sell just the Callaway golf piece for $3 billion, you've come out ahead. You could take care of your debt profile on Topgolf. You could start from nothing in terms of what you owe. You've got some cash in the bank. Now you can operate this company a little bit better. You can operate Topgolf a little bit better. Do the things you really want to do with it as basically a destination for people to go around the country. I think it's a smart move. I think it's surprising. But I had also heard that, and I've heard this for years, and who knows the you know, the provenance of this and how accurate it all is. But, you know, I kind of heard that the Callaway side of things, while doing great, it wasn't as great, perhaps, to the bottom line as it might have seemed. You know, their net income last year was something like $93 million for the company, which means everything in the end, all of the costs, whether that's debt, whether that's manufacturing, whether it's marketing, all everything, cost of goods sold, all that stuff nets out to $93 million. And that's not that much, right? I mean, it's profit. It's plenty of profit, but it's not that much. So if you're trying to unload the things that cost you a lot of money, well, making golf clubs costs a lot of money. And if you spin off that piece of it, you take that off the table. You could still have that relationship. You could still negotiate that with the next owner. That's fine. You don't have to deal with that anymore. And at the same time, you've got all of these Top Golf locations, many of them with prime real estate all around the country. And that real estate alone is probably worth $1 billion, maybe more than that. So even if you had zero money coming in otherwise, you could unload all of this and still come out ahead on Top Golf. That's why they're doing this. That's almost certainly why it's happening. It's a real estate play, unloading stuff that's just kind of onerous. There's not a real easy synergy here between the two things. They've found that out the hard way over the last couple of years. And now they're just ready to go ahead and move on from the whole darn thing 3 years into consummating this marriage, because the merger was completed in March 2021. I think that makes sense. I think it's a good thing if you find the right buyer for both. I suspect that's probably what's going to happen here. So, very interesting story. Doing some digging on it. And, you know, it's a weird thing. The weird places you hear stuff and get information. But a couple of weeks ago, I was telling a friend this. I was at a Cub Scout meeting. My son does Cub Scouts. This is last year for it. And I was talking to a buddy of mine that I've known since our kids were in preschool together. And we were talking about a driving range pro here in our area who was saying that there are some serious issues with Callaway Golf and that they might go under. And what I didn't understand at the time, I thought the conversation being relayed was about the driving range and its facility and its ability to sell Callaway clubs. But it sounds like more it meant, hey, there's some serious rumors here around Callaway's future. Now, it doesn't mean Callaway as a company is going under or it can't make money. None of those things. But what it means to Topgolf and why the investors want to keep Topgolf and get rid of Callaway Golf, you can make some assumptions. You can read between the lines a little bit. If you wanted to keep Callaway Golf, you'd say, okay, that's the more profitable one. That's the one you foresee for the bigger future. That's the one whose valuation you see creeping up. And I don't get the sense that that's the case here. So very interesting altogether. Just wanted to bring that to your attention because I think it's an interesting story. And you don't really, this kind of stuff doesn't happen every day. So I thought it was worth talking about. Second story for today is about the meeting from Monday. I know it's Wednesday now. We were going to do a show yesterday and then a whole bunch of stuff happened. So on Monday, we had this meeting in the Bahamas with the board of PGA Tour Enterprises, so Monahan, Strategic Sports Group, which meant Fenway Sports Group, including John Henry, Steve Cohen, the guy who owns the New York Mets, the player directors on the board. Tiger's the vice chair, so he's technically not a player director, but he is the vice chair, and or at least on that board. And they all went down to the Bahamas to meet specifically with Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who is the governor of the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. And the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia is the overwhelming owner of LIV Golf. They're the benefactor. They've poured the billions of dollars they've poured into this. They've turned the golf world upside down. But the players or the player directors had never, basically for the most part, if not all, had never met Al-Rumayyan. Now, Rory McIlroy had. He used to be on the board. And McIlroy has talked openly in recent weeks about his desire to see a negotiation accelerate quickly and come to a deal quickly. And I think that's where he has sparked a conflict with the players on the board currently. And many of the players on the PGA Tour, many of the stars on the PGA Tour, who aren't so sure that that needs to happen, who aren't convinced that with the money they have from Strategic Sports Group, that, you know, they got a $1.5 billion in the bank. They're looking at $3 billion. That why do we need the Saudis? We can just wait them out and we can go have someone else invest for the money the Saudis want to put in, not have the conflict in terms of morals and ethics and the association with the Saudis and just go from there. That's what a lot of players think. And McRoy's kind of the opposite mind. And I think it's because he believes a couple of things. One, his stance has softened to some degree about the Saudis, at least publicly. And that's not necessarily, he has said in the past, you know, I want the Saudis to invest through us. I don't want the Saudis to start their own thing. So in a way he softened his language, but I don't think his stance has changed. He's also frustrated by the board because there are so many conflicting opinions and many of them don't agree with his view. And I think he's upset a lot of people on the PGA Tour because he has helped to engineer a dramatic change in how the PGA Tour works in an attempt to compete with the Saudis, an attempt to create a better product. And is only, and I'm not saying only, but so far it has only enhanced the better players with more money. There's not more people watching the product. The rank and file have a harder time getting into many tournaments because they've been excluded from some of them. They don't have access to the $20 million tournaments, the rank and file, for the most part. And that has caused some anger. That's caused some people to get upset at McIlroy. So McIlroy's kind of stepped away from this role and said, you know what, forget this. And he has, I think, some, not sympathy, but he has not sympathy toward Liv. He has been explicit about that. I do not like Liv. I don't want Liv around. That has not changed. I mean, he said on Sunday at the Players, Liv and Greg Norman and the staff of Liv, their players have done a disservice, and that's the word he used, disservice, to Yasser Al-Rumayyan and what he's trying to accomplish. And he believed, McIlroy did, that by meeting with Al-Rumayyan, the players would be able to see and understand from Al-Rumayyan directly what his goals are, what he wants, what he's trying to accomplish. And then Jay Monahan, after the meeting, issued an update to players through a text message, called it a, quote, productive meeting, and then said, I pretty much can't tell you any much more about that because we're not negotiating in public. We don't want to share this stuff publicly, so we're going to keep it under wraps. Just so you know, basically a line of establishment's been, or a line of communication's been established. The meet and greet went pretty well. The players got to hear from Al-Rumayyan what he wants and what his goal for the future is. Now, Golf Channel talked about this a little bit yesterday. I think it was Kira K. Dixon who was doing it. She said she had talked to a couple sources, I guess, and that they had indicated that the players on the policy board and the enterprises board don't necessarily have a whole lot of alignment with Yasser Al-Rumayyan and what his future for golf might be. And I think that's kind of to be expected, to be understood at this point. We've been in this negotiation for 10 months, if you're the PGA Tour. You've been in this 10 months, whatever speed you've been doing it, whether you've been slow walking it or what. But in 10 months, you have to have figured out that you guys don't see quite eye to eye. And if you had, this would have been done by now, right? But it's not, which means not only do the players not necessarily see eye to eye with Al-Rumayyan's vision, the principals might not, at the PGA Tour at least. I think Strategic Sports Group and perhaps Monahan called this meeting. Again, this is me reading the tea leaves. This is reading people, how they talk, how they act, what their motivations are, trying to formulate what happens. Al-Rumayyan has been in conversation in Saudi Arabia with Monahan. You would assume Dunn and Herlihy were there. I know the Strategic Sports Group people were represented there in some fashion. I don't know how fully, but they've had these conversations in person. They almost certainly were the ones to call this meeting. They were the ones to say, hey, look, you player directors need to meet with this guy because it's not working with us coming back to you and communicating what's happening. You need to know what this guy wants. You need to get to know him a little bit. And that's how business is done. Even when you disagree with somebody, if you get to know them, you get to spend some time with them, you start to find common ground, you can find compromises, and maybe you find an agreement along the way. I think Al-Rumayyan knows at this point where he is. He knows the PGA Tour is in sharp disagreement with him, significant enough disagreement with him to have not done a deal yet. He knows the players are fractured. He knows the players will not speak with one voice yet. They don't have it yet. They may never. That's really hard for a guy controlling billions of dollars to try to negotiate with effectively 12 people with 12 different motivations. That's really hard to do. I don't care what business you are or where you come from. That is just fundamentally difficult. And I'm sure it's frustrating. And he has probably reached the point in the process where when this meeting was called, he goes, hey, look, fellas, here's the deal. Here's what I want. Here's what I hope for. And those are the conditions upon which I will invest in the PGA Tour. And we can figure out how to wind down LIV or bring LIV into the fold, bring everyone back together. And we could do it this way. Or you guys can say no. We can just stop this now and I'll keep spending. I'll go make a $1 billion offer to Rory McIlroy. And maybe he'll say yes. I will go make an equally sized offer to Scottie Scheffler. I will spend as much as I need to destroy you. And in the process, that, you know, this is a personal thing, right? This is as much business as personal. And I know McIlroy tried to say on Sunday, he said basically the Saudi Public Investment Fund just wants to park money for a long time and get a return on it. And that they want to invest in secure businesses and the PGA Tour is one of them. Well, I think we've kind of proven that's not true, but at least as a secure business. But I think there is a personal component to this. And not only for, you know, Greg Norman, for Al Ramayan. And if he thinks these folks, these golfers, think they know better than him and can outsmart him and outwit him and outinvest him, then he's going to show them. And that might mean another $5, $10 billion thrown at something that, again, doesn't get a whole lot of people to watch. And if that's what happens, and whether more people go watch LIV or not, is immaterial to the damage it would do to the PGA Tour. And it's already been done in terms of people not watching as much. You need people to watch. You need people to come in person. You need sponsors to care. If you take away top players, it doesn't even matter if they're not being watched elsewhere. They're out of sight, out of mind. If they're not on the PGA Tour, you can't market them. And if you can't market them, then you can't get people to watch, can't get people to come, can't get people to spend. Well, all of a sudden, now you got a big problem. And that could mean, I've said this to people, I think golf is set back probably 10 years, but I'll temper it 7 to 10 years by what's happened the last 18 months. Something like that. 7 to 10, it's going to take a long time unless Scottie Scheffler becomes new Tiger Woods to get people back and interested in golf in the way they were at one point not too long ago. And if that's the case, if this keeps going on, you could push that horizon out longer. It could be 10, 12, 15 years because people will just have had enough. And I think that's the real danger here. And what I don't know, and I can't speak to because I don't know each individual player director personally. Never have, never going to. But I don't know if they see the forest through the trees. And they don't have to see the forest the same way I do, right? But they've got to see it together. And they have to forge a plan of action about what to do. If they want to say no to Al Ramayan's conditions and goals and money, so be it. But you need to know then what happens next and what you do in reaction, right? Because I don't think that there's a dramatic uptick in interest in LIV. I think people miss some of the top golfers. I think they, you know, they've gone to LIV. You know, your Rahms, your Koepkas, your DJs. Maybe Cam Smith to a degree, not so much now. They miss like 3 or 4 guys. And you have to weigh, if you're the board, whether it's worth getting those 3 or 4 guys back and taking on everything that comes with the Saudi investment, whatever that is, whatever you think that is, or you can say, no, those guys aren't worth that, worth the headache, worth whatever. Decline the investment. And then what's your backup plan? Do you have another investor in the wings? Are they waiting for it? Will Strategic Sports Group say, we won't give you the full $3 billion if you don't do this? Will TV partners say, well, you've got to kick us back money. We're not paying you as much because we're not getting the same ratings. Sponsors saying the same thing. there are consequences to actions, and it's not mine to decide what happens, but you have to know, or at least try to game out, what you think's going to happen when you make a decision like this, one way or the other. And I think we're now kind of at that point of the negotiation, where it is on the PGA Tour to, and the players, really, to decide whether they want to do this or not. And if they don't, what do they do next? And I think that that part is what they've got to figure out. You got to make your decision tree. You got to make your plan. And I think the piddling around, kicking the tires bit is done. I think Al Ryan's done doing it. And I think Strategic Sports Group's probably done dealing with it. They've put their money in. Now you do your part. And that part could be no. That part could be yes. But they've got to figure it out pretty quickly. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Back tomorrow with another show. Try to do it early in the morning. Got a nice tea time tomorrow. Looking forward to getting out and playing some golf. You get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. Check me out on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Ryan Ballingy Golf. Golf News Net is on all of those services at the handle Golf News Net. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening to Two Off the First.